is Loveworks' Love in Conflict. All recorded and printed Loveworks materials are copyrighted by Loveworks, which is owned and operated by Real and Free Incorporated. Any unauthorized duplication of these materials is strictly prohibited.
Hi, and welcome to Loving Conflict. My name is Sonica Tinker, and I am presenting this with my beloved husband, Christian Peterson.
That would be me. And we can already hear your first question is, did she say loving conflict? I mean, isn't the whole point of conflict that you aren't doing it very lovingly? And could you possibly love conflict? What on earth could there be to love about that? We're going to give you a completely new idea about what conflict is and how to move with it. But first, we want to start with a little parable for you. Once upon a time, two brothers who lived on adjoining farms fell into conflict. It was the first serious rift in 40 years of farming side by side, sharing machinery and trading labor and goods as they needed without a hitch. But then the long collaboration just fell apart. It began with a small misunderstanding, and it grew into a major difference. And finally, it exploded into an exchange of bitter words, followed by weeks of silence. One morning, there was a knock on John's door. He was the one brother. He opened it to find a man with a carpenter's toolbox. "I'm looking for a few days' work," the man said. "Perhaps you would have a few small jobs here and there that I could help you with." "Yes," said the older brother, "I do have a job for you. Look across the creek at that farm over there. That's my neighbor. In fact, it's my younger brother. Last week there was a meadow between us, and he took his bulldozer to the river levee, and now there's a creek between us. Well, he may have done this to spite me, but I'll go him one better. See that pile of lumber curing by the barn? I want you to build me a fence, an 8-foot fence, so I won't need to see his place anymore ever. That'll show him." The carpenter said, "I think I understand the situation. Show me the nails and the post hole digger, and I'll be able to do a job that pleases you." The older brother had to go to town for supplies, so he helped the carpenter get the materials ready, and then he was off for the day. The carpenter worked hard all day, measuring, sawing, nailing, and about sunset, when the farmer returned, the carpenter had just finished his job. The farmer's eyes opened wide. His jaw dropped. There was no fence there at all. It was a bridge. A bridge stretching from one side of the creek to the other. A fine piece of work, handrails and all. And the neighbor, his younger brother, was coming across, his hand outstretched. "You're quite the fellow to build this bridge after all I've said and done." The two brothers met at the middle of the bridge, taking each other's hands. They turned to see the carpenter hoist his toolbox on his shoulder. "No, no, wait, stay a few days. I've got lots of other projects for you," said the older brother. "I'd love to stay on," the carpenter said, "but I have so many more bridges to build."
In this presentation, we're going to be talking with you about how can you actually use conflicts to build bridges. Christian just said something great as we were preparing for this presentation, that conflicts are actually a ladder to heaven if we only know how to use it that way. And that's exactly what we're going to give you here in this presentation. And before we jump into that conversation, we want to first of all, tell you a little bit about who we are and about Loveworks and why the whole issue of relationships is so important and why we often find ourselves inevitably in breakdown of relationship and what we can do about that as we dive into the material of how you can access the gift of conflict and love conflict.
We're also going to be presenting a fight for you. This is an everyday sort of argument that could be taking place between any couple, and we'll do it in two versions. We'll be presenting the fight as it would sound before incorporating the concepts that we're teaching here. And then at the end of our presentation, we'll do the fight again as it would sound after incorporating all the concepts that we're going to be teaching you in this presentation. So stay tuned for that.
So let me start by telling you a little bit about myself and how I came to be doing this relationship work with my beloved husband here. My name is Sonica Tinker, as I said, and I've got a master's in social work. I'm a relationship expert and transformational coach, and I've been leading courses and coaching, counseling couples and singles for almost 30 years now. I don't like to think that I'm that old sometimes, but but I have been around a while. I'm a certified neurolinguistic programming professional. I'm a certified Enneagram teacher. I'm a motivational speaker, and I'm also the author of the book Seize Your Opportunities, Living a Life Without Limits. We're currently in process of writing a book on relationships, which we're very excited about. And we've done a couple of home study courses on conflict for couples and for singles as well. Christian and I are both owners of LoveWorks, which was founded originally back in 1990. And LoveWorks is a relationship training company that masterfully weaves together cutting-edge personal development strategies, practical application of law of attraction principles, and heart-centered practices, all designed to help you heal, transform, and create breakthroughs in your relationships. How I originally got into doing work on relationships actually started with watching my own parents go through their divorce when I was 15. They went on to get remarried and divorced and remarried and divorced and remarried and divorced. And I got to watch through their marriages and their divorces a lot of what I have since gotten to see in my 30 years here of working with couples and singles in relationship, a lot of what had them miss each other in communication. And I really wanted to have a different kind of relationship. So I set off to do just that. And my first couple of relationships didn't fare any better, right? My first relationship was with someone who didn't talk to me at all. And I finally ended that relationship, and it ended also with us not talking about why we were even ending it. And my next relationship turned out to be a battering relationship where I was being beat up on a regular basis. And it actually turned out to be a gift in retrospect because it got me into therapy. I worked with a transactional analysis at the time, and I would go in every week and gripe and complain about this battering relationship. And it wasn't until several months in, he looked up from his copious note-taking and said, "Has it ever occurred to you that you're playing a role here in this victim experience, that some part of you is fueling being victimized?" And I remember just being completely shocked, you know, partly because the guy had actually said something, and partly because of what he had just said to me. I don't know if you've ever had that experience where somebody says something to you and it goes all the way in. Something changed for me in that moment. Because as I began to take in the truth of what he said, I realized if I was playing a role in a victim experience, that meant I had more control and more say-so than I had ever realized prior to that point of what I experienced in relationship. And that really was the beginning of me taking responsibility, taking charge, starting to direct the course of my relationships. And while certainly I went on after that experience to create many more breakdowns, conflicts, and relationship, I was able to use them to learn and expand and develop myself into the human being I am now. And of course, I made sure I got help. I mean, I did not do all of that by myself. I made sure I went and studied with masters in relationship. And I learned so much from all of my studies with Landmark Education, the Hendricks Institute, the Option Institute. I studied with Tony Robbins at the Robbins Research Institute, took some classes through the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, Skydance and Tantra, just to name a few. I also was able to facilitate at the Human Awareness Institute, the Sex, Love, and Intimacy workshops for some 7-8 years. And all of those experiences of study, as well as my own personal experience, as well as all that I learned from the precious opportunity I had to work with the couples and singles in my trainings and my coaching sessions, I was able to effectively learn what it takes to create and manifest an amazing relationship. And my husband and I are living proof of what is possible. And on a daily basis, we look at each other in amazement at what we have created. And we have the privilege of getting to teach people like yourself how to do the very same. So I'll end it there and let you, Christian, come in and you can share your story about how you got involved in this whole relationship training business.
Thank you very much. I will. My name is Christian Peterson, And I'm originally from Denmark, which will account for why I speak like this. And I'll just hope that it's understandable to you, because it's not likely to get any better anytime soon. How I got into the world of relationship was, how I normally say it is, I just did everything wrong for so long that I just had to do something else. I was a normal young man, you could say, with normal ambitions. I was going to university, getting myself a degree, trying my best to create this relationship that would be the relationship that I could live with for the rest of my life. I really just wanted a relationship full of love and laughter and friendship. And I never seemed to be able to find that for more than, you know, very brief period of time at a time. And I just kept repeating myself over and over again. You know, in some of our other trainings, we'll talk about what the typical evolution of a relationship is, the relationship downward spiral pattern. And I went through that relationship downward spiral pattern time and time again. And it was frustrating me so bad. And it also didn't help that I was just plain lonely and I didn't know how to deal with that. I didn't know how to deal with either conflicts in relationship or my own conflicts, which abounded, and there was no outlet for it. So I just sucked it all up like a stereotypical strong man. I just sucked it all up and stuffed it in my backpack, my proverbial backpack somewhere. And it just got worse and worse. And it dawned on me, well, little by little, it dawned on me that I just had to do something else, not only with relationship, but with my entire life, because the direction I was on, which was in the natural and social sciences, it just didn't bring me any satisfaction, because I could see that the skills I was learning there weren't really skills that in any way taught me how to live a great life, how to be an empowering and empowered person, how to be an inspiration, how to have great relationships, how to create love. None of that. And that's really all I wanted. It wasn't until somebody started coaching me, which was my sister-in-law, bless her heart, who started asking me pointed questions about what it was I was doing. And that is really what had me start to look at, okay, great, what role am I playing here? Maybe it's not all the other partners in my relationship that there's something wrong with. Maybe it's not just because we're hopelessly different. Maybe there's something else to be discovered here, and I dare say there was so much other stuff to be discovered about that. And in our conversation here about conflict, it was clear to me after many years, it got clear to me that I had no idea what conflict was or how to deal with it. And the only way I knew how to deal with it was to conclude, after having had conflicts with my partner, that since we apparently can't agree on this, we must be incompatible. And I'm out of here. So we split up. And it was often because the conflicts were mounting in a way that none of us knew how to deal with. So now I'm doubly excited to be able to be on this end of the microphone, so to speak, and get to share this completely new paradigm for conflicts. It's been mind-blowing to myself, even, in using the strategies and ideas that we're talking about here, how totally different my entire experience of conflicts are. And I want to say, when we say conflict, we use that as an umbrella word. It means big stinking fights. It means disagreements. It means arguments and anything in between. And now we live in a completely different situation around conflict. It is no longer creating the contention and tension that would have earlier on had me conclude, well, we're just not compatible. We know how to use it now for the gift that it is and for the loving practice that it can be. And I know it sounds, you know, if you would have told me that 10 years ago that conflict could be a loving practice and a downright gift, I would have said, you must be crazy. I don't believe that at all. And now I know it to be a fact because we have taught it to so many people and we live it ourselves every day. So enough about me on that.
Well, the thing I want to actually end here with is truly our best credential is that we live this, not just with each other, with our children, with everybody we work with. And just as you said, thousands have been impacted by this. new approach to dealing with conflict, to being in relationship. And I just want to assure all of you, whether you're single or coupled, whether you're married, gay, or straight, whether you're someone in relationship or somebody new to relationship or somebody more experienced, or if your relationship is in breakdown, massive breakdown, or you just want to improve an already existing relationship, this presentation is absolutely going to make a difference for you. We use everything we teach with our children, with our friends, with our families. It's applicable everywhere. So you're going to get some valuable information here.
I want to add to that, the people we work with are singles that use the skills of conflicts to bring into their dates. They are couples that have already divorced but find themselves in a very unpleasant relationship and they want to have a better relationship moving forward. Maybe they share children, for example. Or they're couples who have been married for 20 years and just find themselves stuck in the same arguments over and over again. Another word that I want to expound on that I mentioned before is I called this a new paradigm of how to look at conflict. You know, the word paradigm, it often sounds so big and bulky and important and scientific to me when I hear it, but we use that word because we're not just talking about another great idea. We're not just talking about one great technique, one new skill. A paradigm literally means the boundaries for your thinking. They set the limit for how far you can go, not only in your mind, but in your life. The best analogy I can think of is flat earth paradigm. Back when, you know, in the unenlightened ages, when they used to think that the earth was flat, and they literally could not go more than some miles out into the ocean, and they were sure that they would be swallowed up or land in the abyss where all manner of bad things would happen. So nobody would dare venture out there, until eventually some brave souls did. But for hundreds and hundreds of years, nobody did. And it's the same thing with the relationship paradigm that most people live in even today is akin to flat earth paradigm. And the conflict paradigm they live in is the same thing. There's only so far you can go if you live inside that paradigm. And even if you learn three new skills, another good exercise, three good words to use in communication, if you still operate within that paradigm, you really can't break free and use it for the potential that is in there. You have to shift your paradigm, and that is what we're talking about here.
And it's not surprising that we find ourselves stuck in an old paradigm, because unless we learn some new way to think or some new way to approach being in relationship, being in conflict, we're going to do the same things that we learned by default, right, from the people who raised us or the people we were around as we were growing up. And it's a little crazy when you think about the fact that relationships are everywhere, right? We have relationships with our partners, our children, our community, our store clerks, our schools, our churches, workplaces, our clients, right? Even with ourselves, there is no place where relationship is not, right? Even when we're alone, we're having a relationship with ourselves. We can't escape relationship. I don't think any of us would argue about how important relationships are to us. We revolve our lives around our relationships, around our families, our extended families, our work lives. Our relationships inform who we are and what we do. They give our lives meaning and purpose, and they're intended to be where we go to replenish ourselves with love, with soul nourishment. And the significance of our relationship is very apparent. It's most apparent, actually, when our relationships are in breakdown or in need of attention. Isn't everything affected? I mean, think about it. If a loved one gets sick or dies, doesn't everything get put on hold? If you get into a fight with your partner, doesn't it consume a whole bunch of your attention, right? Needless to say, if you're in a stressful relationship, right, your mood sucks, your self-esteem suffers, sometimes your health deteriorates, your kids might act out, you produce less at work, you might make less money. Conflict can have some pretty impactful consequences.
Yes.
And yet, in spite of that, relationship is the one area we disregard the most. Most of us never received any relationship training or coaching. again, save for the training we got by default from the people we were raised by. And because we have no training, every day we are left to wing it. I mean, think about it. You're winging it. You're doing your best with what you know. And if you haven't had any training, then you're doing whatever you do on the fly. And so it's not surprising and unfortunate a lot of times that we end up saying and doing things in our relationships that create more mess than bliss. Relationship is the only domain where we expect success with little training or conscious effort.
And think about it. You would never expect that of yourself if you were taking on the endeavor to learn how to pilot an airplane. You'd never expect to be able to do that without extensive year-long practice, both theoretical and practical and with mentors. And same with any endeavor. You wouldn't expect to learn how to ride a bicycle without having practiced, without having your mom or dad hold you as you tried.
And really, most of us would be pretty embarrassed to have anybody actually see what goes on behind closed doors. We cry, we yell, we fight, we bicker, we shut down, sleep in separate rooms, disappear into work or TV, we quit having sex, we become more and more distant, dissatisfied, right? When we're really triggered or we're in the middle of a fight, we can act out in all kinds of crazy ways, you know, slam doors, run down the driveway in the middle of the night. How many times have you vowed to not say or do that thing again? And next time you're in a stressful situation, you're doing exactly that same behavior, despite your good intentions. When we have problems in relationship, our shame, our low self-esteem, our privacy issues all kick into play. We think we should know better. We don't want anybody to know that we don't know any better, and so we don't ask for help. And that keeps us trapped in relationships that are full of tension and distance, where we argue, blame, disrespect each other, where we feel stressed, bored, frustrated, and lonely. Or a lot of times we keep ourselves single for fear of what we're going to create in the next relationship should we get into one. All of this resistance or all of these background influences that come into play keep us from seeking help. If we're not asking for help, we're not learning anything new. We don't have the opportunity to shift our paradigm, to shift our thinking, to have some new practices to bring with us into relationship.
When we do dare venture out to get help, we usually go to traditional therapists in an effort to figure out what is wrong with us, or better yet, what is wrong with our partner or the relationship. We go into therapy and we sometimes spend years trying to figure out what went wrong and how it was maybe connected to something our parents did or some painful childhood experience, trying to find the source of the breakdown so it won't happen again. But very often, even after years of therapy, we go out and repeat the unworkable patterns anyway. So we created LoveWorks as an alternative to traditional therapy. You see, we don't think there's anything wrong with you or your partner. There is nothing that needs to be fixed, really. We've taken a broader perspective in our work and have come to examine and question the fundamental way we go about relating. You, like most good people, you just keep doing what we've always done, expecting great relationships to happen all by themselves, and we're kind of shocked when that isn't the case.
Another point to make here in this conversation about conflict is about learning and what it takes for us to create change in relationships. Learning and change doesn't happen quickly all by itself, as much as we want to believe that's true. That's one of the common misconceptions we bring with us into relationship. We expect us to be like machines, right, where you just put in a new program and bang, you know, different behavior is the outcome. Well, in actuality, it takes time and effort for change to occur. Cognitive biology, which is one of the several topics I've studied, it defines knowledge as the ability to act. To know something in our head is not the same as being able to actually act on what we know. We all know that with several other domains, right? Sports, law, medicine, real estate. We know that learning takes time before intellectual understanding is translated into action.
And that reminds me of one of Sonica's friends is a black belt Aikido master. And he said, when he learns a new move, a new defense strategy in Aikido, he has to hear it 300 times before he really understands it. And he added, I have to practice it 3,000 times before it's knowledge in the way Sonika just described it. That is, it's so embodied in him that he can make the action without thinking.
And the most important piece of that is that it takes time for him to embody that new practice. And the same is true for us in relationship. In the domain of relationship, we've also got to recurrently practice new relationship practices before they're going to become second nature. But in the domain of relationship, we really expect ourselves to be able to read a relationship book or hear a new idea once and be able to instantly implement what we learned. We expect ourselves to be able to fly successfully with our partners in relationship with no practical relationship training, coaching, or support. So I know it makes sense when we say that, but we, in general, move in our culture with very little relationship training.
We had a mentor once who said, we live in a drive-through, add-water, microwave society where everybody wants everything yesterday for free. And it's certainly we're steeped in that idea that everything can happen in a couple of hours. Because, you know, when you watch any television show or any movie, you can watch our hero or heroine go through a life's worth of struggle and challenge and come out victorious, always, of course. And it all takes 2 hours or 1 hour. And we kind of expect that of ourselves, that we can go through this and come out victorious in an hour. And if we can't, well, it probably isn't worth endeavoring.
So how that shows up in our relationships is that we unrealistically expect our partners to change quickly when we tell them we don't like something. We want them to quit doing something. When we do that, we actually expect our partners to change overnight, not realizing that us human beings are much more like plants than machines. Just like a seed in the ground takes a while before it becomes a full-blown plant, sometimes we are like that as well. It takes a while before some new idea sinks all the way down, right? Gets translated into action. So be mindful of that as we embark here on this conversation about conflict, that while you might hear some ideas here, it may take some time before they become embodied and get translated into your relationship. But I promise you, you keep working with what we're about to give you here in this next little bit, you're going to experience a profound shift in your relationships.
How we're going to continue from here is we'll start out by doing a sample fight. We'll actually act out a little fight for you, and we'll use it throughout the rest of this presentation to refer back to. What you're going to hear now, I'm going to play a husband who's just coming home from work. Sonika will be the wife who's already at home. Could have been the other way around, but this is what we do here. You're going to hear me coming through the door, and then you'll hear me drop my coat and my briefcase on the counter, and we'll take it from there. Here goes. Hi, honey, I'm home.
Oh, honey, please don't put all your stuff on the counter. I just cleaned it off today, and I really just, I don't want all that stuff on there.
What's the big deal? I just got home from work. Just let me sit down for 5 minutes, okay, and relax. I just got a lot of stuff on my mind,
no,
and can we deal with that some other time?
I don't want to give you 5 minutes, because I give you 5 minutes, turns into 10 minutes, turns into a week, and then, you know, you add stuff to the briefcase and the coat, and then we got other stuff on the counter, and then it takes me two hours to clean it off today.
Why are you on my back about a coat and a damn suitcase on the counter? What's the big deal? I just want to sit down for 5 minutes, all right? I'm pretty tired.
I am tired, too. I have been working all day cleaning up the house, and I feel like you don't appreciate me. Look at this. I just cleaned this off. I just want you to not mess it up
I've been out since 6 o'clock this morning. I just got through an hour's worth of traffic. Why do you always greet me with just jumping on my back and hammering on my head with these ridiculous, unimportant things?
I do not always do that, and I wouldn't always do that if you didn't always put your junk on the counter. I am so sick of this. I feel like you don't appreciate me. I have to do everything around here.
So that's the end of the sample fight. We're now back to normal, and we're okay. Don't worry.
So we're going to take a little time here to dissect this sample fight here and talk about some of the common misconceptions we bring to conflict with us that result in us having that kind of an interaction.
And we'll use it both to present it in the light of what we could call an old paradigm for dealing with conflict and a new paradigm, which is what we're here to teach for how to deal with conflict.
So one of the first points we want to make here about how we have a tendency to approach conflict in the old paradigm is this idea that conflicts shouldn't be. They're bad. They're not welcomed. We would all much rather be happy without conflict at all.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. In some of our workshops, we'll ask the audience, how many of you here would just rather be totally without conflict? How many of you would just be happier if there weren't ever such a thing as conflict, period? And pretty much every single time, every single person will raise their hand.
The problem with coming at conflicts like they shouldn't be is it has us resist them when they show up. We have a tendency to want to push away the conflict, to fight against it, to wish it away or push it away, to fight it away. And the act of resisting it from the stance that it shouldn't be gets in the way of us being able to use conflict for the benefit we believe it's intending to bring. Perhaps you've heard the statement, what you resist persists. A lot of times what we find in our work with couples and singles who have this stance of pushing away conflict is the act of resisting it becomes part of the problem. It actually becomes part of the conflict and exacerbates it, actually makes it worse. So there's a whole other way to be about conflict that we invite you to consider, which is that the idea that conflicts are inevitable. Conflicts are a part of life. They're a part of relationship. We can, instead of resisting them, we can actually welcome them, include them, use them to discover more about ourselves. One of the ways you can do that is to know that most conflicts are born of our own commitments, our own desires, our own visions. They don't happen all by themselves by accident. We actually create conflict by having a desire for something else, right? In this example with the fight, I have a desire for a cleaned off counter. So my desire for that actually produced the conflict. You might be able to see here, if I didn't have that desire, I wouldn't have greeted him with a fight against having something on the counter.
And I, on the other hand, have a desire to, the second I come in through the door to my home, I just want to dump everything I have in my hands and zone out. I just want to go sit in a chair and think about nothing. However, had I had another desire, which was to come home and clean the house, this would not have shown up as a conflict.
So you can kind of see that in all kinds of other areas as well. If we have a commitment, for example, to have sex 3 times a month, and you only have sex once a month or once every 2 months, now you've got a breakdown. You've got a potential conflict. On the other hand, if you have a commitment to have sex 3 times a month and you have sex more often, maybe 4 times a month, no breakdown, no problem. Where did the conflict start? It began in my desire for something in particular. And when that wasn't met, then I perceive a breakdown. I perceive a problem. I create a conflict. What's useful about this way of thinking about conflict is conflict is now an opportunity for me to discover something about myself. What is it I'm wanting? What is it I want to create here? What am I envisioning? What am I committed to that is sourcing this conflict in the first place? And by welcoming conflict like an invited guest and allowing myself to sit with it and look at it and be with it,
I actually have the opportunity to do that kind of reflection and discover what's the message underneath conflict.
We tend to believe that when there is a conflict, it means that something bad is happening. Something is wrong. Because if nothing was wrong, we wouldn't be having this conflict, right? We also tend to have a bad feeling in our bodies when we're engaged in a conflict. So like when I came through the door, we start talking animatedly at each other, to put it diplomatically. I have a knot in my belly. I notice my jaw is tense, my neck muscles tense up, and I'm kind of in fight mode. You've heard about fight and flight mode for sure. So we feel bad, and all we want is to feel good. So I'm thinking the way to get back to feeling good is to get this thing to go away because it's wrong. This has got to be bad because it feels bad. Another way to look at that is a conflict is a sign that something new wants to be created. It's like a whisper from the future, you could say, that something different is wanting to happen here in your life or between you. So in our little sample fight, something new is wanting to be created around how we allow time for me, the husband, to come home. How do we set up structures that work for Sonika's desire for a clean, neat living room to be taken care of? How do we come up with something new that hasn't been created yet that will make us both happy? And if you know how to use conflict, that is always, always possible, to come up with a third option that is neither yours nor mine as we thought of it to begin with. It's something else entirely, and it will take care of what we both want.
So if you can imagine, this is a very different approach to conflict, to move with it like it's good and it's actually wanting to give something to you. It's wanting to give you an opportunity to create something new. Very, very different approach. Here's another one that goes right along with it. It means something is wrong. It also means something is wrong with you, right? Somebody's at fault. Somebody is to blame here. And again, this is a common approach we bring to conflict in this old paradigm. We're looking for the cause outside of ourselves. I'm hanging around here at home feeling totally great. You come in, put your junk on the counter. Now I'm in a foul mood. I'm pissed off. You are the cause of my pissed offness. And that way of moving in the world, right? That way of moving with conflict, when I approach it like you're causing my upset, I now am victimized by you, the perpetrator. And I've got to now focus in on getting you to change so I can get back to feeling good again. The second I blame, I am now in victim. And from victim, I'm now in powerlessness at the effect of somebody else, right? At the effect of you, my partner, and I am in reaction. There is no possibility for creation when I am in reaction.
So conversely, from my side, when I'm coming home and all I want to do is relax and have fun, and then she messes up my mood and my opportunity to relax because she starts talking about where I'm putting my stuff. Really what I'm saying in that is I'm saying, oh, she has the power to mess up my mood. She holds the key to my relaxation, and she's now an obstacle that stands between me and my relaxation, and I have got to get her out of the way before I can move over to where I'm relaxed. In this way of reacting, I'm just doing what I've always done in a situation like this. And there's a funny thing about reaction versus creation. So when I come into this situation reacting like I do, I am literally reacting. Think about what that word means. If you write it like re-acting, I am acting out again something I've already reacted. I'm no longer really dealing in the present. I'm just playing an old tape that I've played many times before. And it's a curious thing with reaction and creation.
because what we're talking about in this new way of being is creating instead of reacting. I'm going to come up with something new that is born out of what is taking place right now. Write the words reaction and creation right above each other on a piece of paper, and you'll see that if you just move the C a couple of spots, reaction turns to creation. So it's all a matter of how you see it.
When we are in reaction, we are in victim, as I said earlier. We're in powerlessness. And I once heard someone say, when you're in the middle of a fight, like we just were doing this example of, you can hear in the fight that it's like we are both arguing for who is the most victimized. Who's having the hardest day? Who's the one that isn't getting what they want the most? It's an argument for the victim position. And from that place of arguing for the victim position, in that blaming stance, there is no possibility for creation. To create something new in the space of a conflict, in a new paradigm, we need to take 100% responsibility for everything. Now, I want to just take a moment to talk about the 100% responsibility. For the most part, when we think about taking 100% responsibility, we misinterpret that and think of it as I'm taking 100% blame, right? We kind of turn it into blaming ourselves now, and we don't want to blame ourselves, and so there's sometimes reluctance to taking on this viewpoint of I'm 100% responsible for everything that shows up. What we mean by responsible is you have the ability to slow things down and consciously choose a response. In order to do that, you need to be able to slow down and look at your role in the phenomena, your role in the conflict. When you can start to slow it down and see, wow, I helped set up this conflict by assuming some certain things about you, assuming you don't value me and my time, assuming you're not going to take care of my concerns, assuming you're not my partner, right? There are certain assumptions and stories I'm bringing to the party that help set up this whole breakdown in the first place. I've got this desire for a clean counter that I brought to the party. I've got my lack of compassion for your experience and your needs and your concerns that I'm bringing to the party. Those are just some examples where when I take 100% responsibility for the role I play, I have the opportunity to explore and come up with a different choice. So in this new paradigm, I am responsible for everything. I'm responsible for me and my experience. I'm responsible for what I'm creating over there in you. And I'm also responsible for listening to what's happening in the background and coming up with a new possibility, with some new creation, some new creative response.
I want to add to that, that when I declare I am 100% responsible, really I'm declaring to myself, to my partner, to the universe, to God, to everybody, I am a powerful being. I'm a powerful creator. I have the ability to change how I react to things, how I feel about things, how I move in any given situation. I have that power. It's the ultimate power move, really, to say, I'm taking on responsibility for what's going on in my experience right now.
Often the quickest way to end a fight is to take 100% responsibility. To be able to say, yes, you're right, I did that. Yes, I can see how I played a role here. The second one person takes responsibility, you are on your way to unraveling this argument for the victim position that's being played out in the background of your fight.
And a little bit later in the presentation, we'll give you a sample, the same sample fight, but we'll do it from the new paradigm. And you'll get to see how we dance with the conflict in a completely different way when we get to that.
So another old paradigm premise that we bring with us to conflict is it's you or me. either you get what you want or I get what I want, right? In this instance, either you get your time alone on the couch for 5 to 10 minutes or I get a clean counter. With that way of moving, I am assuming that your move to go rest for 5 or 10 minutes is a move against me and what I want. And when, again, when I think of it as you are moving against me, I want to push against you back.
Or remember what I said, that she's now standing between me and my relaxation. And I got to win her, like win the fight over her and get her out of the way before I can get to what I'm wanting.
And in fact, what's happening is he's not moving against me in that situation. He's moving for himself. He's moving to take care of a concern of his. He's not trying to get in the way of me getting what I want. He's trying to give himself something, trying to take care of some concern or need he has. And that is true in every conflict. Whenever you have two or more people involved in a conflict, they're all working to take care of some concern or need for themselves. It only appears from a certain point of view that you're deliberately doing something to get in my way. In fact, that is almost never the case. It is always, almost always the case that you're just trying to take care of some concern or need for yourself.
And if, as in this old way of dealing with it, if I believe that our wants are mutually exclusive, because that's what it looks like to me, we can't have both. We can't both have a clean counter and I get to come in and dump my things and sit down and relax. When I believe that we can't have both and they're mutually exclusive, that is what gives rise to maybe the most prevalent way of trying to resolve conflict, which is come up with a compromise. And a compromise in this sense very often ends up being you get half of what you want and I get half of what I want. Neither of us are really happy, but we might be able to cease the hostilities right now. But it doesn't really bring us to a place of, you know, peace, love, and understanding, which is where we would like to hang out.
We really believe that compromise is always the result when two people stop just shy of coming up with a win-win. We really believe that when you can listen to what your concern is and listen to what my concern is, and we can quit reacting and instead creatively look at what could we come up with here that's going to take care of both of us, you and me. We can both get all of what we want here if we just stay in there long enough, get creative enough. And that kind of creativity and resolution can only come from this premise, this in this new paradigm of it's both of us, you and me, win-win. This new paradigm of you and me can also be expressed in this phrase, expand to include. I'm expanding to include not only my desire for a clean counter, but I'm expanding to include your desire for some rest when you just walk in the door. So instead of you or me, it is now you and me. And if you can kind of imagine too, you or me puts us on opposite ends of a spectrum, right? Opposite ends of the table. You and me positions us as partners. We're in this together. We are about coming up with something that works for both of us. It's very, very different than I've got to slam your needs in order to get mine.
When we live inside of this you or me conversation, another interesting thing shows up, which is, I think you should give me what I want. You ought to provide for me what it is I'm desiring. You are the source of the fulfillment of my wants. And when you don't give it to me, I think it means I can't have what I want, so I get mad at you.
That way of moving throws both of us into trying to get from the other person, right? I'm trying to get what I want from you. You're trying to get what you want from me. And now we're both getting. Our attention is on ourselves. And again, it reinforces this whole power struggle move. When I am trying to get and you're trying to get, you might notice in that little pretend fight we did, nobody's giving.
It's like showing up to a potluck where nobody is putting food on the buffet table. Everybody just came there to get food. Nobody actually brought any food, and you can imagine that you'll have a pretty meager meal out of that.
And this is a common breakdown we see all the time for couples in relationship around conflict, is when both people are wanting something really fabulous in a relationship, and both people are saying, you give first. I want this. Yes, I want this. I want this. I want this. You give first. You go first. And when nobody goes first, nobody gives. Right? So in this instant, I'm busy trying to get a clean counter. He's busy trying to get time just to himself. Nobody's getting, you might notice, right? Neither of us is getting what we want. I'm not getting a clean counter, and he's not having any downtime just walking in the door.
And the way we approach it by I'm trying to get from her, she's trying to get from me, we have this pulling contest where after just a few seconds, certainly none of us want to then give, because there's this pulling contest going on, and we just want the other person to get out of our face and just do what we say, and can we just be done with this? We're not in a giving mood, any of us.
In a new paradigm, there's a completely different place to come from. So rather than me trying to get what I want from you, which again has embedded in it this you or me stance in the background, instead, if I can come from, it's you and me. Your concerns are as important as my concerns. I want to be sure you have your concerns met, just like you want to make sure that I'm getting my concerns and needs met. Now we've got two people advocating for me and my concerns, and we've got two people advocating for you and your concerns. Now we have the possibility of both of us getting our needs and concerns met, both of us being listened to, both of us being considered. And again, that opens up the space for us to creatively work together to come up with something that we're actually going to both feel good about.
We also have to talk about wants here, because in the old way of dealing with conflict, what lives in the background for most of us is, I probably won't get what I want. I'm going to say that again because it's really important. Most of us move into conflict and relationship with a stance that says, I probably won't get what I want unless I fight for it or unless I get it from you. It's not going to be easy for me, and I probably won't get it anyway. This has to do with how we're all trained in the domain of wants. You know, if any of you have kids or you've just been around kids, you'll know that they're veritable want machines. They just want. And the second they have a want desire, they come up with something else. There's just no end to what they can come up with wanting, and they're delighting in it. We as parents and adults and all the other adults that are around them, their teachers and their trainers and their grandparents and their uncles and aunts, we get frustrated with it because we can't provide all those wants. And, you know, we end up saying things like, yeah, what am I made of money? You want. Or maybe you've heard it said, you want. They want water and hell too. And pretty quickly we find out that it's not enough to just want something to get it. You know, just because we want it doesn't mean we get it from our parents, which is where we start by asking for our things. We learn early on that in order to get what we want, we have to get it from somebody. We have to persuade our parents. We have to fight them for it sometimes. We have to coax them, cajole them, lure them, cheat them, something to get these things that we want. You know, to get my extra piece of candy, which I'm not going to get just by asking for it. I'm gonna have to manipulate somebody. I'm going to have to steal it. I'm going to have to beg, steal, and borrow. And we move with this experience into our adult life. And now I'm thinking, now it's not about bubblegum anymore. Now it's about getting my freedom, my free time, my intimacy, whatever it is I desire. If I move in life as if I'm probably not going to get it, it's just going to be hard for me to get things that I want. And I'm going to have to manipulate my partner somehow to get what I want.
And you can imagine if that's your assumption, that you're not going to get what you want as you're going into a conversation with somebody, you come in with a fighting stance. So consider the opposite of that. in our new paradigm, assume for a moment that you are going to get what you want. You're going to get what you want. Your partner's going to get what you want. Your partner wants you to get what you want, just like you want your partner to have what they want. Imagine how a conversation like the sample fight we just did, how that might go if you assumed you would, of course, get what you want. I remember listening to Abraham, for those of you who have listened to Abraham Hicks. Abraham was being interviewed, and the interviewer asked, you know, what is the best experience you can imagine having on earth? What's the best experience possible? And the first thing Abraham said was sex. The second thing they said is the best experience you can have on earth is knowing that everything you want is coming. So think about that for a moment. Everything you want is coming. How would you be in your relationships? How would you be in conflict if you knew everything you wanted was coming? And if you knew everything would come easily for you? You would approach a conversation completely differently from that assumption, that premise, than from this old paradigm premise of there's no way I'm going to get what I want. You don't want me to have what I want, and I got to fight for it, and I probably won't get it anyway.
Can you feel the relief in thinking, I will get what I want? I'm going to get what I want. Even if you haven't figured out how to get it as of yet, if you just play with, I'm going to get what I want.
And I'll tell you, that stance also opens up, as you might imagine, the possibility for creating something good that really does work for both of you. You know, you actually open yourself up to possibility when you live inside the thought, I'm going to get what I want, we're both going to get what we want. Solutions can begin to appear and show up in that space. They can't show up inside the conversation, I'm not going to get what I want, you don't want me to have what I want. All you're going to keep looking for in that instance is evidence to reinforce that you're not going to get what you want. No solutions and creative opportunities can show up inside of that stance, that approach into conflict. So let's talk about another premise that is all too prevalent in an old paradigm. And that is the belief that you are a certain way. So in this example, when my husband walks in the door, I already have a story about who he is, right? That was present in the fight. You are somebody who always makes messes. You are somebody who doesn't appreciate my efforts. You are somebody who does less than I do. You are somebody who doesn't care about my concerns, my needs.
And for me, I'm thinking, you're somebody who always criticizes me. You're somebody who doesn't get off my back to give me a little space. You're somebody who threatens my freedom. You're somebody who's nitpicking over unimportant things.
So we each have a story about each other that we bring to the conversation. And we don't think of it, though, like it's a story. We think of it as being factual, right? I've been living with you for a while. I've been watching the messes. I've been feeling not appreciated, right? I've built a case, and I could ground it with lots of factual experiences and observations that to prove that I'm right about my story. Now, this is probably one of the biggest pieces, and I want to put a little pause here and create some more context to this conversation so it will make more sense to you what we mean by story and how you can more fully step into a completely new paradigm, completely new way to approach how you view your partner. You're going to really get this, so just stay in here for a little bit, okay?
So the way we all move in the world is that we think that we're passively observing the world. I can look at the world around me, so I look out the window, I see a tree, I see another tree, I see lawn, I see wood, I see a cat, I look over here, I see my wife, and there's a fireplace, and I'm looking at things as if they are just things on their own. And this way of looking at the world is what the natural sciences have done for hundreds of years. And it's termed Newtonian way of looking at things, or Cartesian, after the French philosopher Descartes. And basically what it states is that the universe or reality is an observable thing out there. We can neutrally observe the reality around us, and we can describe it with our speaking.
And we do that all the time in our relationships. We move with our partners like they are a certain way, and we're just observing them and declaring who they are with our speaking, right? I just watch my husband walk in the door. I watch him make messes, and I believe I'm just passively observing that and then speaking it at the time that I speak it.
And another basic tenet of the Newtonian way of looking at the world is that we're separate entities. So that if we affect each other, I have to push you to make you move, so to speak. We're not interacting with each other than through our words. In other words, I am separate from everything I'm observing. I'm an outside observer. I'm not part of the tree, the grass, the world, my wife, anything.
And this Cartesian thinking has us not only just move like there's certain things that are happening out there, right? Our partners are a certain way that we're describing. It also has us move from the assumption that in order to change our experience, we need to mold and change reality out there. Quantum physics, which has been recently popularized, basically points to a completely different reality. What they proved, actually, is that the tiniest particles, when observed by scientists, sometimes showed up as a wave and sometimes showed up as a particle. They couldn't figure out why. They were doing all these different experiments and they couldn't figure out how come it showed up differently at different times. And what they eventually discovered was mind-blowing for the implications of it. They realized it was the expectation of the observer that influenced how these tiny particles showed up.
Think about that. Really think about that, because this is really huge. It means, you know, when I'm looking at a table in front of me, I'm so used to thinking that it's a completely solid, fixed object. And we know from our, you know, from our elementary school physics class, we know the table is made up of atoms and molecules. And if you zoom in even further, you'll see the nucleus of the atom and you'll see little electrons whizzing about. And what they're saying is that when you focus in on the tiniest building blocks of reality, which is electrons in this case, I, as the observer, have the power to change them. I can change literally the fabric of reality. This is so mind-blowing. And most of us, even though we might have heard that 50 times by watching The Secret and What the Bleep and reading books and listening to tapes, we don't at all move as if that is really true. And that shows up especially in relationships.
So imagine the implication of that for a relationship. If who I am is just this mass of probability that is influenced by the observer of you, that means there's no way I just am. And there's no way you just are. We co-create each other with our expectation, with our attention, with what we choose to look for. In this new paradigm for relating, there is no way you just are. I am never, ever just passively observing you. I am always actively playing a role in creating you by what I choose to look for, by what I choose to observe, by what I expect to see.
Just like our scientist could affect whether he saw the tiniest building blocks as a wave or as a solid particle, when I look at my partner, I have power in determining whether she shows up as a wave or a particle, so to speak, which in relationship language means as fantastic or terrible, as somebody who nitpicks all the time or somebody who wants what I want.
So in this fight, for example, instead of me moving with you in the old paradigm, like you are a certain way, separate and independent from me, that I'm just passively observing, And so I watch you walk in and throw your junk on the counter, and I'm moving with you like that's just how you are. I'm stuck with it, right? I'm stuck with how you are. Instead, in this new paradigm, I am now taking responsibility for the fact that what I observe helps create you. So I get to see that I actually helped create you to be somebody who doesn't care about my concerns, who doesn't appreciate me, by how I interact with you, by what I expect to experience. And because I come in expecting that, I actually help create that response from you and get to be right about my belief by moving with you that way. In actuality, a new paradigm, there's no way you just are, no way I just am. I'm co-creating you, and I am determining the story I live in about you, about me, about our relationship. Therefore, I have a very powerful potential impact in how you show up by simply shifting what I choose to expect to see.
And what's so great about this new way of looking at it is I all of a sudden discover that I have powers I didn't know I had. I didn't know I had an influence in how you showed up by my mere attention or my mere expectation of how you show up. I always thought that the only change I could affect was, you know, pushing you around or yelling at you, so to speak. Now, all of a sudden, instead of having no power really to do anything, which is why everything is so frustrating, I now have powers that can be put to good use, even if I haven't learned how to put them to good use yet. And you're in the process of learning because you're listening to what we're talking about here. So you're on your way, which is great.
So again, just to reiterate here in this new paradigm, you're instead of living like you just are a certain way and I'm stuck with you, I am now instead moving like I play a role in how you show up.
And that has to do with, remember, we were talking about the taking 100% responsibility. When you couple those two ideas, now you have a really powerful person. Now I have some real influence that I can exert here for good use.
Why this is so important is that if I insist on observing you a certain way, right? So in this case, if I am insisting on seeing you as somebody who is a slob, seeing you as somebody who doesn't care about me and my concerns, seeing you as somebody who doesn't appreciate me, I actually box you up to keep showing up that way. So in this case, it doesn't matter what my husband says or does. He could appreciate me up the wazoo. He could do all kinds of things to attempt to be neat and orderly. And if I am committed to seeing him in that particular story of being somebody who doesn't appreciate me, doesn't care, he doesn't have a shot of showing up as anything other than my story. It's almost like he is going to keep showing up in such a way that I get to be right about my story. Maybe you've had the experience sometime in your own relationship where it didn't matter what you did, right? The person kept seeing you a certain way. They kept saying you were a certain way. Even though you had lots of evidence for how you were appreciating them, they kept saying they didn't feel appreciated. It's because of this whole phenomenon of when I box you up, you actually have to play that role for me until I shift my thinking.
It's testimony to how magnificently powerful our minds are. And the way our minds work is whatever story we live in, or whatever belief we live in, those are interchangeable words, our minds will stop at nothing to prove them true for us. Because our mind obviously believes it since we made it up, so it must be true. And its function is to go find evidence for where that is true. And that means it will make reality true according to my story. So I come home, I already have this story or box Sonica just talked about, that she is somebody who's going to gripe at me, she's on my back, she doesn't give me my freedom or my space. And my mind instantly goes to show me how that is true. So even if Sonica had said something else, I would have still defended against her as if it was true. because that is all I'm seeing.
So we can use the fact that the mind looks for evidence to reinforce what it believes to our advantage. So if I want to create a new story about you as being someone who appreciates me, and I now want to reinforce that belief by looking for evidence, I will begin to open myself to seeing it. And I will play a role in the creation of it as I do that. It's very powerful. We have watched this so many times with couples we've worked with and in our own relationship, where the second we dare to consider the possibility that we're playing a role in how our partners show up, and we can actually begin to see them differently and look for evidence for that, that it's actually there a lot of times. Our minds have just been filtering it out up until that point. And so it looks like it wasn't there, but in fact, it really is often there most of the time. We were just working with a couple in a recent workshop where the woman in this case was very upset and just totally living the story that her partner didn't love her and didn't want to be with her and was excluding her and wasn't telling the truth about it. All the while, he was standing right there in front of all of us to see, completely loving her and including her and appreciating her, and she couldn't take it in as long as she was steeped inside this story. And with our assistance, she was able to step out of that, and instantly, they were completely connected. The second she could step out of the story, there was the possibility for her to really see how he was there for her.
Yeah, it was marvelous.
Very, very powerful. So what is great about conflict is if I'm pissed off because you are a certain way, it gives me a chance to look at what am I doing to fuel that conversation. Another thing we often say is that relationship is a mirror. Relationship is a mirror to me of myself. It's mirroring to me who I'm being, what I'm thinking, what I'm focusing in on. So if my partner's showing up in a way I don't like, I get to now look at how am I fueling that? What is my role? What is my part? And the other thing I'll say here about boxing is that if I've got you in a box, I almost always have me in a corresponding box. So in this case of the example, I've got you in a box of somebody who doesn't appreciate me. I often have a corresponding box that I'm not worthy of being appreciated. I'm wanting to be right about that belief, and so I've got to keep you held in this role of somebody who doesn't appreciate me so I can be right about my own belief that I'm not worthy of that. As I shift that, like, okay, instead of we just are a certain way, we can co-create something else here. We can co-create a new relationship where I'm somebody who's worthy and you're somebody who appreciates. And we actually have all these tools and strategies we teach in our work for how do you actually unbox yourself and unbox your partner that are beyond the scope of this presentation here. But there are powerful tools you can use to change your story, no matter how long you've been in a relationship.
And when you consider your relationship a mirror, you can also begin now to dispel another old paradigm myth of conflict in relationship, which is that conflicts happen to me. It's a little bit like I'm just standing here minding my own business, and then from a bright blue sky, whack, something just hit me in the face. I don't know where it came from. What Sonika is suggesting inside this mirror analogy is that it's actually happening for me, not to me. It's happening for me to show me something, to give me an opportunity. And Sonika and I, we actually believe that this is true about every single thing that shows up in our life. And you can consider whether you want to take that one on. We believe that everything that shows up in our life, be it conflict or miracle, every single one of those things happen for us, for the purpose of us to get wiser, get clearer about what we want, have experiences, enjoy ourselves, learn new things, grow, expand. And if we use them like this, if you use your conflicts like they're happening for me, you're going to ask yourself completely different questions in order to deal with it.
So in this sample fight, instead of me moving, with Christian when he walks in the door. Like, I'm just minding my own business, and now he's coming in messing up my counter. Right?
It happened to her like a rain shower on a sunny day.
So instead of moving, like now this conflict is happening to me, and I've got to deal with it, and look at what you did. I was perfectly happy before you walked in the door. To instead move with it like, wow, it's happening for us to uncover our beliefs that were playing out in the background. It's intended to reveal our desires.
And to assist us in creating something that's better than what we've had hitherto.
Every conflict is providing us with an opportunity to make something better. And in that way of moving with conflict, we have, again, this is going back to some of what we were talking about earlier. You'll embrace it, welcome it, rather than pushing it away and fighting it. And take in the opportunity of it to use it to expand yourself, to help you rise, to have even more of what you desire and what you want in your relationship vision. You see, we believe that every conflict, every problem, every breakdown has a positive intent. Every bad feeling, every painful thought has a positive intent. If you were to take it and drill it all the way down to the essence of it, you would find something good. I remember when I first came across this idea, Christian and I were at the Option Institute where we met and studied with a profound teacher, Barry Neil Kaufman, and his wife Samaria. And I was taking a walk with him one day and I was asking him, how is it you're able to be this happy? How is it you're able to be this profoundly centered and powerful in your life? And I remember one of the things that he shared with me, he said, I really believe that the universe is benevolent, that God is benevolent. And it really struck me to hear that. It wasn't until hearing that I realized how much I sometimes moved like the universe was malevolent, right? Like that it was trying to have something bad happen to me. And it really opened up this whole other idea that everything really has a positive intent. There's something deliciously loving that's wanting to be given to me, shown to me. I'm being expanded to grow with all of these situations that in the past I would have thought were bad for me. I mean, think about that in your life. Haven't you grown the most from some of the most difficult things you've gone through or experienced?
And haven't you often had the feeling that something really bad was happening to you, like you were getting the short end of the stick whenever somebody broke up with you, you lost your job, you had a big fight with your kids or your beloved or anything like that?
We just recently had an experience. Actually, it was not so recent. Many years ago, we lost a ton of money, like a lot of people, right, in this whole economic climate. And it has turned out, in retrospect, to be one of the best things we ever experienced because it has called us to rise and to find our strength and our commitment and our vision in a way we never would have if we hadn't have lost all that money. So in retrospect, we can see the positive intent that we were given, right, the positive gift we were given from that experience. So the same, we believe, is true for every conflict you experience in relationship. It's intending to expand you in some way. It has a positive intent, a positive gift for you.
So we're almost ready to do our sample fight all over again, but from a new paradigm. However, before we get there is a couple of things we need to address first. And the first one is, one of the biggest reasons why we so dislike conflict and we spend so much time getting out of it, get rid of it, is that we have a belief that I can't handle this. Even in our little sample fight, I start fighting because I want it to go away. And inside of that, I'm really telling myself, I can't handle this. I can't deal with this. Just go away. Just shut up with your complaints already so I can get back to relaxing. And for Sonika's point of view, she's thinking, I can't handle this. You're doing this all the time. It's just too much for me to handle. And in saying so, we're really saying, I'm smaller than this problem. whatever the problem or the conflict is. It's bigger than me. I can't find a good way to deal with this. So I just got to get out of it because it feels so bad. We want to flip that totally on its ear and say, always, I am never presented with anything I cannot handle. If it's showing itself up for me, that means I can handle it. Even if I haven't figured out how to handle it right now, I'm certain that I can handle it. Yes, here's another opportunity for me to expand my notion of how much I can handle. Can you imagine if you approached it from that point of view instead of, I can't handle this, I gotta get rid of it? Can you feel how you're almost getting a couple of inches taller just saying, of course I can handle this. I know I can do that. I've done it before and I can do it again. We're gonna come up with something that works. And this is really important in all manners of life, whether we're talking about relationship conflicts or the time when Sonika and I lost a ton of money, like Sonika just referred. We found a place in us that it turned out we could handle so much more than we thought possible. Right when it happened, we were terrified and panicked almost, and we knew we were going to handle it. Sonika actually at that time, she made a little sign that she put up on her bulletin board that says, I'm a powerful woman. I can make good on anything. And we bring that to every conflict, to every relationship, to every aspect of our life now. I can make good on anything.
Another way we say this is to live in the affirmation, right? We are resourceful beyond limits. There are no limits to our sourcefulness, our resourcefulness. And if you think about the word resourcefulness, we are reconnecting with the fullness of our source, of God, Spirit, whatever word you want to put there. And when we connect with our power, when we connect with our resourcefulness, we are connecting with that infinite space of possibility that Spirit is. And in that place, all answers, all solutions, all creative resolutions can show up from that place, if only we will remember who we really are and what we're really capable of. When we approach conflicts with a lot of what we're talking about here, when we approach conflicts like they shouldn't be and they're bad and I'm a victim and you're to blame and I'm not going to get what I want, I can't handle it, I set myself up in this sample fight, for example, to not resolve anything. I am not in any place to work together as your partner to come up with a creative solution. When we have this fight that ends, usually fights like this end where both people don't feel like they got anything that they wanted, then I set myself up to carry a grudge into the next scenario. I now have another bit of evidence to add to my story, to add to my trigger, right? I have another bit of evidence that I get to bring into the next scenario when you put something down on the counter.
It's not only going to be the next time I put something on the counter that she's going to bring this grudge into that scenario. It's also going to be the next time anything like that happens. It can be next time we're out driving and I'm not paying attention to what she told me to do from the co-pilot seat, for example, if I'm the driver. It could be the next time we're having sex and I'm, in her view, not paying attention to her.
And the belief in the background there is that you're this way, you've always been this way, and you're always going to be this way. There is no possibility for shifting or changing. Now, one of the things we've discovered in ourselves and in our work with people is that there is always a gap between how we want to be and how we happen to be right now. Don't you have a gap between your vision, your ideal vision of yourself, and how you happen to act in the moment? Well, your partner does too. They have a gap between where they would like to be and who they're being right now. And in this process of growing and changing and developing, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to have breakdowns. We're going to not do things how we want to do them because we're learning. Don't you want to be forgiven when you make a mistake? Our partners also want to be forgiven. They want to be given a second chance. They want to be seen for how they want to be and who they're committed to being, and they want that to be reinforced. They want that to have the attention and the focus, just like you do, just like I do. We actually train people in our work in this distinction because it's a crucial one. You want to be able to hold your partner in a favorable light and to know that they are doing their very best to rise to that. Now, I want to say that again because this is a very different way to approach a partner in conflict, right, than we usually do. We assume malintent. We assume they don't care. They don't want to do it instead of assuming they do. They just have these habits and patterns that they learn from the people that they grew up with. They're doing their best to shift and change, and they're going to have breakdowns and problems. They're going to forget. So in this moment, right, in this sample fight, we both forgot. If we can use that as an opportunity to remember who we're committed to being, that we really can have what we want. He really does want to give to me. He does want to support me. I do want him to have some time, some transition time when he comes home. We want to give that to each other, and we're going to forget sometimes. And to build into our whole conflict practice, forgiveness, where I forgive you for not being able to successfully rise to this vision of yourself in this moment. I forgive myself for not rising up to who I'm committed to being in this moment. And a really great thing to do at those times is to do a do-over. We actually do that with our kids a lot. You know, we'll be in the middle of something that didn't go quite how we wanted it to go, and we'll just stop everything and say, do-over, and then we'll actually step in and do a do-over from this more forgiveness place, this granting space to the other person to rise, to step back into this whole other way of thinking that this is good for me and it's okay, we can get what we want, we can create a solution here that works for both of us, you and me. It's an opportunity to step into this new paradigm.
And get this, friends, when we try our best, which we do, we try our best to resolve conflicts or deal with them inside our old paradigm, as we call it here, they don't actually get resolved. So in our sample fight, you know, typically how that would end is we just go our separate ways and maybe we huff and puff a little bit and, you know, then it kind of disperses. But it's really more akin to when you're at war, if you make a truce, that means we're going to cease the hostilities because that sort of works for now, but it doesn't restore peace where everybody can relax and go on with their happy, wonderful lives. And the same is true in relationship. It's not because there's something wrong with us or there's something wrong with our partners. When we try to deal with conflict from the old paradigm that we have been outlining here, we're just set up to fail. We're set up to have it not really, truly resolved. And when it doesn't get really, truly resolved, and I don't get restored back to peace and good feeling about myself and about my relationship and about my partner, I'm just prone to carrying this hurt or madness or anger or grudge with me. We want to tell you a little story about that.
A teacher once told each of her students to bring a clear plastic bag and a sack of potatoes to school. For every person the students refused to forgive in their life's experience, they chose a potato, wrote on it the name and date, and put it in the plastic bag. Some of their bags were quite heavy. They were then told to carry this bag with them everywhere for 1 week, putting it beside their bed at night, on the car seat when driving, next to their desk at work. The hassle of lugging their bag of potatoes around with them made it clear what a weight they were carrying spiritually. They had to pay attention to it all the time. They had to remember to not leave it in embarrassing places. It limited what they could do. They weren't free to play, to move about easily. It consumed their focus and affected their moods. They became more and more irritated by the impact of this bag of potatoes on their lives. Naturally, the condition of the potatoes deteriorated to a nasty, smelly slime. This experience revealed to the students the price they paid for keeping their pain and heavy negativity. They were able to see that not forgiving, carrying grudges, impacted their quality of life more than it affected the people they refused to forgive. So a good question to ask here is, how heavy are your potatoes? What are you carrying around in your relationship that you bring with you to each and every interaction? That, again, just the act of heaving around this bag of potatoes, all of these grudges, sets you up to react in a certain way with your partner, to react consistent with how you have been reacting in the past, rather than coming in with a free, clean, clear slate for creating something new. Forgiveness is about letting go. Forgiveness is about creating a new story. Forgiveness is about giving like you did before the grievance. And it's a very important practice in this whole conflict conversation we're talking about, to be able for both of you to create a practice for forgiving, for letting go, for coming creatively up with solutions that work for both of you so you can feel good moving into the future.
Okay, the final thing we want to tell you before we do our sample fight all over again is maybe the biggest, most important distinction of everything we're talking about here. And that is, in our normal way of going about conflict, we often find ourselves trying to figure out what it all means. Have you ever had that experience? You have fights like the sample fight we just had, or just teeny little disagreements, or anything like that that shows up, and you wonder afterwards, what does it all mean? Why do we keep having this? Why do I have this uncomfortable feeling in my belly? Why do we keep running up against each other? Why can't we just make it work out? Why are we so different? And you try your best to analyze it based on everything you've learned and everything you know, and you come up with different answers. And you could have 10 different disagreements. One is in the car. One was when you had sex. One was over who gets to have the biggest piece of pie. One was over, you know, like the sample fight we did, and so on and so forth. And you have 10 different fights, and they look like 10 different problems, and you come up with 10 different answers for why that is. And in the end, I know for myself, I used to try to figure out why I was having all these conflicts. What did it mean about me? What did it mean about my partner? What did it mean about my relationship? And it just took so much energy to figure it out, and it was driving me crazy. And I got this really great piece from The Course in Miracles, actually, where they talk about the difference between how ego, as they call it, moves in the world, and how spirit moves in the world. As an ego, as this is their term, as an ego, you go through life, and the things that happen to you, you try to determine the meaning of them after they happened. So things just happen to you, exactly like the old paradigm for conflicts here. It just happened to me, and then you try to figure out what the heck did that mean about me, my partner, my relationship. The other way to do it, which is, in my opinion, this is a way that to bring yourself relief forevermore. That is to decide in advance what your future conflicts are going to mean. And that's what the Course in Miracles says. That's how spirit moves. You just decide already what it means. What we're deciding now that all our future conflicts mean will determine how we deal with them in the future. That's how we're able to live in what we now call loving conflicts. We love our conflicts now. What we're determining now in advance is that our conflicts, they mean everything we've lined out for you in this presentation. It means something good is happening. It means something is happening for me. It means I'm being presented with an opportunity to learn about myself, to learn about my relationship. It means I'm being assisted by this benevolent universe to create something that's better. It means I'm being given an opportunity to expand myself, to grow, to get more than I was, to become a better person, to become a better man, to become a better lover, father, husband, partner. It means all of these things. And when we believe our future conflicts will mean this, it's a lot easier for us to be loving our conflicts. From this place, it's actually possible. And we know this to be true because that's what we do now in life. Is we most of the time, not always, we have our exceptions because, you know, we have a gap as well. But most of the time, we actually even have fun with our conflicts. Can you believe that? Does that sound totally far-fetched? You know, if you had told me that 5, 10 years ago that you could actually be loving your conflicts and have fun with them, I would have said, what have you been smoking? Yeah, you're probably the lucky one who never fights about anything. But for me, I guess, I dare say it's a different thing. But I know different now. We know different now.
We're now going to do a do-over with this fight, incorporating everything we've been talking about so far. So we're going to come from now in this new scenario that conflict should be, that there's something we're desiring or wanting that's being expressed in the background. It means something new is wanting to be created. It's got a positive intent in it. We're going to come from the place that it's you and me. We can both get 100% of what we want. And we're going to assume in this new scenario that you want me to have what I want. And you're going to assume that I want you to have what you want as well. We're going to come from that we're resourceful, we're creative, we can come up with something here that's going to work for both of us. We're going to come in deciding all of that in advance. So watch how this plays out, and we'll come back and talk about it when we're finished.
And remember our sample fight. I'm going to be the husband who comes home from work. You're going to hear me shutting the door, and then I'm going to drop my coat and my briefcase on the counter, and we'll take it from there.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
Hi, honey. I am so glad to see you. Hey, I am wondering if you'd be willing to not put your stuff on the counter. I just cleaned it off today, and I'm really enjoying it being all cleaned up.
Yeah, I could do that, but, you know, I'm really tired. I just would love to sit down. Would it be okay if I just took 10 minutes over in the swinging chair, and then I'll do it?
You know, I would love to give that to you. And I got to say, I'm a little concerned you might not get back to it. Is there any way we could support you to have your time and have me have my counter cleaned off too?
You know, I'm actually realizing something else right now, which is when I come home from work with I always have my things, and I don't actually have a better place to put them. You know, when we don't have a coat rack in our house, or, you know, right here in our entryway. And then there's just this big, beautiful open space, and I'm thinking, hey, where better?
Well, I'm appreciating that you're appreciating the open space. And I have a place for them.
You do?
So is that really the only issue? So if we came up together with a place to put it, then you would do that?
Show me right now.
Okay, cool. So this is where I think your briefcase could go. And how about right over here for your coat?
Cool. I'd be willing to do that.
Oh, that would be so great. Thank you. In fact, I'll help you. I'll do the briefcase. You do the coat.
I have an idea. Yeah. How about tomorrow when I come home? I'm going to open the door, and then you're going to rush toward me, and then you're going to take my coat and my briefcase and say, "Welcome home, honey." I don't know, is that going to be too much like a butler?
Well, I don't know if I want to promise that for every time.
Maybe just tomorrow.
Okay, I'll do it tomorrow. And how about I sit with you while you relax? Would you be open to that?
I would love that.
Okay. Would you like something to drink?
I would love a cup of tea is what
I
would love.
All right, I'll get
and
you
here,
a cup of tea.
Why don't I go put my briefcase and my coat in their new designated spots and you make tea.
All right, I'll make tea and I'll bring it out to you in the hammock.
Cool.
All right.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! That's what's possible when you come from a clean slate. So you can see in this analogy, I am welcoming, I'm assuming he wants to help. And in that approach, we actually can bring to the forefront, wow, you just don't know where to put it. I never even knew that. You never even knew that. Now all of a sudden we have solutions that can start to show up for how can we both get what we want here.
And what's so amazing about a tiny little, it's a 2-minute example we're doing here. It's the exact same thing that's happening. I'm walking through the door. I'm dumping my stuff on the counter. And we have a completely different, as you could tell, result out of it. But what's so interesting is that everything we've been talking about in this whole presentation, all the distinctions we've talked about, new paradigm or old paradigm, all of them live and get presented inside a 2-minute interaction between you and your partner. All those things we've talked about, it means something's wrong, it means something's bad, it means I can't have what I want, it means I can't handle it. all those things, they live inside that two-minute window. And they're all being communicated through your body language, your thoughts, your arm movements, your words, your intonations. It's this whole gigantic package gets exchanged between you and your partner inside of 2 minutes, which is why it feels so bad sometimes, because it's not just this two-minute discussion, and it's not just about a couple of items on a counter. It's about all those things that we talked about.
That we're bringing with us to the conversation. I mean, just as a simple highlight here, I have to assume partnership, assume I'm going to get what I want in order for me to even make a request. Would you be willing to put your stuff not on the counter? I've got to shift totally where I come from for that to be what comes out of my mouth. So really what Christian is saying is so important. It's this whole background conversation that we live in that's got to shift if we're going to change an interaction.
You can liken it to, say you're watching a movie, you're watching just a two-minute scene of a couple interacting in their house. Great. What's going on behind the scenes is, you know, we all know that if you could zoom out behind the scenes, you would see that there were 50 people engaged in 50 different complex tasks that interact in complex manners in order for you to be able to see a two-minute section of a movie in the movie theater. And what we're showing you here is what is going on behind the scenes when you have little interactions like this. And conversely now, we're showing you a new way of what is going on behind the scenes. So in the new way of doing it, there are still many things going on behind the scenes, but they're radically different activities that are taking place behind the scenes. Which is why it doesn't make sense for us to expect ourselves to totally change the way we deal with conflict just because we learn a new communication technique, or just because we change the words we say, or just because we try to avoid doing that something that pisses our partner off. Because that is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, the bulk of the iceberg is below the surface. Just like the bulk of the activity in the movie scene is taking place behind the scenes where you can't see it. It takes time and education to really change the behind the scenes activities so that you can create a completely different movie. We just created for you a completely different movie because we have learned through years and years of practice how to create a completely different behind the scenes.
If you would like to learn how to shift behind the scenes, we invite you to come do some of our relationship trainings. We give you distinctions so you can actually embody what we're talking about. Again, I want to bring up what we talked about at the beginning, that we're much more like plants than machines. Don't expect that you're going to listen to this CD, hear all of this, and be able to go out there and shift your communication completely.
We still have not discovered a way that we can teach like they did in the Matrix movie. Did you see that movie, The Matrix? You know, where they just ram the rod up to the back of their skull and then they flicker their eyes for 2 seconds while they're being downloaded a new program and pling, they know everything. They're ready to move with the new information. When we find a way to teach like that, we'll tell you about it. That is just not the case about us humans. We are really more like plants than machines.
And we give you distinctions that allow you to actually embody it. So we have strategies, tools, formulas. We have different questions to ask that allow you to actually step inside this new way of thinking, this new way of approaching conflict. So we invite you to find out more about our work at www.loveworksforyou.com.
That's all spelled out, loveworksforyou.com. The reason we do all these live trainings is that it has such a profound impact on our learning when we can actually embody it. So the trainings we do are all very experiential in nature. So you get to actually do it. You get to actually say it. You get to actually experience it, which just makes learning so much faster.
And we promise that if you study and learn these different distinctions, you absolutely can create for yourself the most remarkable relationship.
Consider your conflicts, however grave, however small, it doesn't matter what kind. Consider your conflicts a gift, a loving gift that is there to present you with some new opportunity, some new excitement, some new learning, some new growth that you haven't thought of before. And we also want to assure you that no matter where you are in your relationship life, whether you're single or whether you're a couple, whether you're a beginner to your relationship or you've been in it for 20 years, whether your conflicts seem to be the only way you interact with your partner, you just have conflicts and fights every day, all the time, or whether they're just, you know, these little dissatisfactions that show up here and there. If you use your conflicts like we're talking about here as doorways to something new that wants to get created, your relationship now have the possibility to go to completely new heights. And instead of having conflicts be this downward spiral that's just grading away the foundation of your relationship, you can have it be an upward spiral, like a structure that's being built higher and higher and higher to create something magnificent out of your relationship.
You deserve to have everything you want in relationship. It is possible to create a harmonious, loving relationship. You can do it. If only you know what to do.
Yes, absolutely. We send you off with our warmest blessings and our love.
Here's to loving conflict.
And remember,
love works for you.com.